You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 11th of August, 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com, because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Good day, Matt. How are you doing?
You know, we have one hell of a future ahead for us. I just saw it today, a job description for an IRS agent that requires and include training in combat firearms. And these are for ordinary agents, weapons training and everything else. But we have a lot to look forward to.
Well, yeah, that's what your IRS gets trained up with. Our IRS over here gets trained up in there being 100 different genders and how to be an ally to ethnic minorities and how to push the homosexual agenda. I think it's something like 1/5 of all their training time is spent on diversity training. But that isn't what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about warmongering in Iran. In addition to escalating brinkmanship with Russia and China, President Joe Biden's administration is flirting with war against Iran. The clearest evidence of this includes the ever-expanding maximum pressure sanctions campaign, as well as the development of a US-led NATO-style alliance encircling Iran. There is also ample support for Israel's incessant drone strikes, assassinations, and ceaseless bombings of allegedly Iranian targets in Syria. Last month, Biden traveled to the region to publicly genuflect before the rulers of America's cherished Gulf tyrannies and apartheid Israel. The aforementioned burgeoning alliance topped his agenda. In May, Tel Aviv's US taxpayer-subsidized military murdered Shireen Abu Akleh, a world-renowned Al Jazeera journalist, a Palestinian Christian and American citizen. During a raid on the occupied West Bank's Jenin refugee camp, the Israeli occupation forces shot her in the face while she was wearing a press vest. They also attacked her funeral procession, attempting to knock her casket to the ground whilst mourners were carrying it. Well, this is the first I've actually heard of this, Matt. Do you know what Israel actually said they were doing there, why they shot this journalist and why they attacked the funeral procession? Did they give a reason for this, do you know?
Well, they're not admitting that they shot anybody, despite the fact that it was an armor-piercing bullet, you know, frequented by Israeli snipers. The U.S. Has gone over there, you know, keeping this quiet and saying, well, you have to hold someone responsible for this. So who knows who they'll throw under the bus. The Israeli police over there said no Palestinian flags in the funeral, no chants, no nothing having any national content at all, and they ignored it. But as it turns out, the IDF and local police were planning to attack this long before there was any view of any Palestinian flags. They were setting this up for this. There's no doubt that, and they're not the only one. She's not the only one who was either shot or injured in the press corps. There was another one from Central Asia who was shot. We know that this was the Israelis because the IDF raided her house just a few hours later. She must have stumbled onto something. I've never heard of her before, but she must have stumbled onto something that they're going to kill her. And the Israelis are aware that the U.S. isn't going to do anything. There's no outrage, no reporting. And part of the reason why this was included is because this is just one more casualty in the world war that the U.S. is trying to start, hopefully with proxies, but you never know. So this is now the third front of a extremely violent war that the U.S. is trying to provoke. They're willing to set the planet on fire to maintain any illusion of dominance.
So they're going after Iran now, after starting all this trouble with China in the Taiwan Strait, and of course, goading Russia into attacking Ukraine. Well, Biden, Israel's man in Washington, got off the plane at Ben Gurion Airport and said, "Our bilateral relationship is bone deep." And speaking for the vast majority of Americans, he stated emphatically, "We are completely devoted to Israel's security without any ifs, ands, or buts, and without any doubts about it." He went on to sign a joint declaration with acting Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid, committing the US to use all of its national power to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. During an interview ahead of his Israel visit, Biden said he would use force, threatening war against Iran as a last resort. "It is not enough for the Israelis. They demand an offensive and credible military threat against Iran." Lapid called it the real thing. Biden refuses to lift the necessary sanctions to return to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the Iran nuclear deal, which means at least the brutal economic war on Iran will persist in perpetuity. This week, Biden levied fresh sanctions on Iran. Biden's issuance of sanctions has become more frequent in recent months, and ever since the other members of the P5+1 began approaching a finalized deal. Now, I've heard that Biden's been particularly weak on Iran, and this is from somebody that is a pro-Israel supporter, and they've been saying that Iran has said that they do want to have a nuclear weapon, and that Biden has been making motions towards going back to this Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. And that's quite clearly not so, according to this author. But I do wonder, this section here at the end here, where it says, ever since the other members of the P5+1 began approaching a finalized deal, is that referring to this deal, the original Iran nuclear deal? Have they been working on that? And are they saying, look, we have a finished product here, we want Biden to sign it? Is that what's going on? Could that be what my friend was referring to, Matt?
Well, this has been in the works for a long time. You know, Iran, even though it's a total violation of their sovereignty, you know, the world decides what kind of power they have. Iran was complying with it 100%. And the current CIA chair said that. And he also admitted that they were lying about all of this. So Trump, in a moment of weakness, pulled out of the deal unilaterally. Of course, the U.S. does this for every treaty it's a part of, unless it's with Israel, of course. I've read, you know, the text of the deal, the you know, comprehensive plan of action, and very little has anything to do with nuclear weapons. I think it was here. I was one of the first on our side to note that the deal deals entirely with civilian reactors. This has nothing to do with weapons. I mean, Pakistan has nuclear weapons. You've got China developed nuclear weapons in the Mao era in 64, and no one said a word. Now, this is about reducing Iran from the first world, you know, powerhouse it is today, highly, you know, scientifically advanced, tremendous education system, and reducing it to the third world hole it was in 1979. These are aimed at civilian reactors. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again on here, that the jump from a civilian nuclear reactor to a weapons grade it's a totally different plant. It's a totally different process. And there's no evidence that they have. Now, of course, we were also, I think, one of the first to say that in the, you know, official Iranian theology, there is a fatwa against nuclear weapons. Islam has always condemned nuclear weapons. Obviously, Pakistan doesn't listen to it because it kills too many innocent people and it poisons the land and it does all this extraneous damage. So they have no interest in this. They've never had any interest in it. And this is this deal is about civilian power. This is about Iran making the jump from an oil-based to a nuclear-based economy when the oil runs out, becoming a dominant hegemon in that part of the world. This has nothing to do with nuclear weapons. It never had anything to do with nuclear weapons. It's the result of a threat that Iran is becoming one of the advanced scientific countries in the world, and they're not allowed to do that. And it really doesn't matter. Yes, Biden, you know, Biden's people can have him sign this, but the U.S. can pull out of it at any time. It's meaningless. And this is why the Iranians really, they're not interested in this anymore. They were doing everything they were supposed to do. They gave away, you know, mountains of their refined and treated uranium and got nothing in return. The U.S. increased sanctions rather than decrease it a few years ago. So it really doesn't matter who signs what. Iran is not going to pay any attention. And it's no accident that recently, I guess what, in late July, Putin visited Tehran, and they're working out more and more deals, whether it be energy or electronics and everything else that they're involved with, chemicals, high-end stuff. And he also went to Turkey too. This is no accident. So there may be a document that or a resolution that guy signed in Israel, but real resolutions have been signed with Turkey and Iran right after all of this. So it's a meaningless document. The U.S. will find any excuse to violate it, and the Iranians know that. So I don't think they're going to sign anything.
It's interesting that Putin is very friendly with Israel, but is also very friendly with Iran. As you say, he's doing deals with Iran at the same time. He's protecting Syria, and he has a good relationship with Israel. I mean, Israel said, we'll step in and be the peacemakers between Russia and Ukraine, if you want, because we get on well with them. I just find it interesting that Russia can be supportive of Iran, supportive of Syria, and yet is still friendly with Israel, whereas America has to take Israel's side on all of these things, and also Saudi Arabia's side. I guess it's because America is allied with Israel and Saudi Arabia that makes Iran America's enemy. Well, let's have a look at what the other things that have been happening with this Iran nuclear deal. As Dave DeCamp, news editor at antiwar.com, reported, the U.S. on Monday issued fresh sanctions against Iran meant to target the Islamic Republic's oil and petrochemical sales to East Asia. The new sanctions targeted three Chinese firms and one UAE firm accused of doing business with the Persian Gulf Petrochemical Industry Commercial Company, the PGPICC, which the U.S. Treasury Department says is one of Iran's largest petrochemical brokers. According to the Treasury Department, the PGPICC facilitated the sale of tens of millions of dollars worth of Iranian petroleum and petrochemical products from Iran to East Asia through the firms that were hit with sanctions. The sanctions are the latest sign that the Biden administration is not serious about reviving the Iran nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA. On Monday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken was asked if the US was ready to return to the JCPOA, but he sidestepped the questions and put the responsibility onto Iran. Donald Trump and Biden's maximum pressure campaign has led to 40 to 50% inflation rates and medical shortages. Washington has deliberately suffocated the Iranian people, almost half of whom now live below the poverty line. Last year, former Prime Minister Naftali Bennett told Biden his strategic vision for Iran was death by a thousand cuts, or myriad military and diplomatic attacks, as well as clandestine attacks, the grey area stuff. Bennett went on to demand US troops remain indefinitely in both Syria and Iraq. And in both those countries, the American troops are not welcome. How are these sanctions actually going to affect these companies if what they're doing is basically facilitating sales of Iranian oil to East Asia? I mean, how can American sanctions affect a firm that is dealing with China and Iran? I don't really quite understand how they're going to be punished if they're dealing with those two countries, Matt. What are your thoughts?
Well, I have a fairly lengthy paper on my Patreon on the very concept of sanctions. What does it mean legally as far as American domestic politics is concerned? And it's purely symbolic. These are Chinese firms. They're already under American sanctions. They don't really trade with the U.S. to a great extent, so it doesn't punish anyone. The only time a sanction could matter, and even sanctions are, they have to be targeted. They have to have specific aspects and a cause and a solution. All this has to be laid out in the law itself that no one ever bothers to read. And of course, the president can lift them unilaterally through executive order whenever he wants. But sanctions is like a press release where we're doing something because we're too weak to do anything else. Sanctions have been a boon in many ways to Russia and now increasingly China. It's creating this huge alliance with major countries in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which will take Iran in as a full member. And now Turkey wants to be a part of it. The U.S. is trying to crush the Belt and Road Initiative, which is probably the biggest threat to the U.S. that no one talks about because no one understands it, its implications. No one really thinks systematically. This is, this whole death by a thousand cuts, they're talking about destroying the Iranian economy and driving people to starvation. usually sanctions law, always as a boilerplate, has limitations for, you know, food and medical supplies. Well, not where Israel is concerned. You do have American medical firms working in Iran. It's too advanced of a place. This inflation has a lot to do with other things rather than American sanctions. Iran doesn't really trade with the U.S., hasn't in years. So these are symbolic shadowboxing kind of things. Most people don't even know what a sanction is or how that actually works. It's a press release. It will have nothing to do with the economic development. But I'm not so sure the sanctions are what led to these inflation rates. I have the feeling this all is post-COVID, disruptions in supply and all the rest of it. So, the U.S. doesn't trade much with the U.S. I think the only thing that may matter would be sanctions on people like, you know, the Gulf Emirates or Saudi Arabia. But even there, it's very iffy. But at the very least, they're trying to block even militarily any concept of a developing, even increasingly developed Iranian economy using this. And that's all the U.S. cares about.
I just got just a thought there. I'm just remembering back to COVID. You brought COVID up then. Iran was particularly badly hit by COVID at first, wasn't it? There were lots of deaths, apparently. And obviously, since then, we've learned that 99% of people survive COVID. Yet there was a huge amount of death, or so we were told, in Iran right at the start of the outbreak of COVID. Any thoughts on that, Matt? Was it COVID that caused that? Were those genuine deaths? What was going on there? Do you know?
Well, that was right when it first happened, and I was very suspicious because, don't you remember, in the very beginning, it was only Iran and North Italy, and I said, oh, this must be targeted against the Iranians. But that was my very first thought. Then, of course, it spread everywhere. American journalists have no idea what happened in Iran or who died and who didn't. But why North Italy? So very quickly, I abandoned the idea that this is a targeted attack. Iran has a lot of economic problems. The first is drug addiction coming in from American dealers in Afghanistan, which, of course, is coming to an end. The second, millions of refugees that Iran has brought in from all over Central Asia, Afghanistan in particular, that's draining them. Third is huge military spending that came from constant threats from the U.S. Finally, COVID itself and everything that disrupted. Iran is an export-oriented economy. War in Afghanistan, the endless wars everywhere, the constant insecurities, constant assassinations from Israel. This has been – these are the disruptive things. Sanctions don't matter a whole heck of a lot because the main trading partners of Iran don't have much of a relationship with America anyway. So, it's very simple for an ignorant journalist to say, oh, the sanctions are destroying the country. No, all these other things are doing damage to it. But Russia's going to be, fixing this. The Chinese are fixing this. And we'll see in a little bit other things that are fixing it. Remember, after COVID, oil dropped to almost nothing. So Iran really suffered. Now, right around the time everything started to collapse, it's a state-controlled currency. I think interest rates have for a long time been pegged at 18%. And given that it's a state-controlled currency, they have far more levers to fix this than, say, the Fed would or the Rothschild dynasty would in England. So, yes, these are the things that are causing the problems, not sanctions. The sanctions don't help, but they're not the main culprit.
So you think it was probably a lack of medicine at the time, and that could have led to a larger number of people dying from COVID over there just because of the lack of lack of modern medical facilities and all the sorts of things that we actually had in the West. Because, in Italy, they had a lot of old people there. So I guess it could have just been a lot of old people as well. And all of that has led to this high inflation rate. Yeah.
I've never gotten an explanation from anyone. And I've been researching this for a little while as to why Iran. Why was this the first real hotspot? So far, I've not come across a workable explanation. It's very curious.
It is. And it's not really talked about, is it? Or it hasn't been since then. Well, let's have a look at the popular perceptions of Iran. The decades of lies and unsubstantiated assertions by hawks about Iran's non-existent nuclear weapons may remain a usable casus belli. Americans, aware of Israel's arsenal, which includes 200 or more nuclear weapons and makes US aid illegal, are considerably outnumbered statistically by those who falsely believe that Iran has the bomb. The Iranians have never sought nuclear arms, and they recently reiterated twice that they have the technical capability, but despite their encirclement, Tehran has chosen not to take this course. That must have been what my friend was referring to. They said they have the technical capability to do this. The development of such weapons is haram under Islamic law, forbidden by the Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwa. However, this was never about the phony threat of Iran nuking Israel. The Iranians' latent threat is unacceptable for Tel Aviv because it may finally restrict the Israelis' ability to attack their neighbours with impunity the way they bomb Syria every week. And our listeners are probably aware of Israel bombing Syria every week, but I dare say the general public just don't realise that's actually going on. In the book, Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism, Scott Horton, the Libertarian Institute's director, explains, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his then defense minister, the former Prime Minister Ehud Barak, admitted in 2010 that even if Iran were hypothetically to gain atomic weapons, the Israelis were not afraid the Ayatollah would attack them in a first strike, as they constantly tell the public. Instead, they were merely concerned that it would limit their freedom of action against other regional adversaries such as Hezbollah and could cause a brain drain of talented young Israelis to the United States. Netanyahu's immediate predecessor, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, told the New York Times that just as Pakistan had the bomb and nothing happened, Israel could also accept and survive Iran having the bomb. Former Clinton administration's State Department official Jamie Rubin also explained in Foreign Policy that the problem was never an Israeli fear of a first strike by Iran, but Israel's real fear, losing its nuclear monopoly and therefore the ability to use its conventional forces at will throughout the Middle East, is the unacknowledged factor driving its decision-making towards the Islamic Republic. So they're saying there it's more about Israel being able to go after Syria, go after people in Iraq, go after Hezbollah, go after people in the Lebanon, and none of them being able to strike back because they know that Israel is a nuclear power. But I'm not quite sure that prevents them from striking back. I mean, look at the Palestinians firing their rockets all the time. But I guess Syria doesn't fight back. Syria just seems to accept being bombed by Israel and never fights back. So, yeah, I guess it does seem to be... It does seem to be preventing these countries from fighting back, Matt, doesn't it?
You know, the trend seems to be that we say something on this show, something along these lines, what the real motive is. And then, you know, a year later, sometimes 6 months later, you have a mainstream person saying the exact same thing using the same language. There's a lot more people who listen than I think we realize. And a lot of the things that we pioneer on this show end up becoming something that a mainstream figure will say 6 months down the road. This happens constantly since we started. And this is one of those things. The Western press, which of course is Judaic to the core, painted this almost psychotic picture of Iran. Pretended that it was a third world country, they're in the Stone Age and all the rest. And that all they care about is seeking nuclear weapons to destroy Israel for no reason. And, you know, Johnson's Law being what it is, it's going to be accepted. Just the word Iran now has just taken on this this psychological content. And that's really how foreign policy is justified to a great extent. And, of course, nothing could be farther from the truth. This is a big part of it, that Israel is – you know, Israel suffered some bad defeats recently thanks to Russia. Well, in Lebanon a few years ago, it was from Iranian – Russian weapons training, and of course in Syria, where the Russians defeated the agenda both of Israel and the U.S. Afghanistan. Oh, and I forgot to mention my favorite news reports over the last few days. The Iraqi parliament, which is now, you know, an anti-American, anti-liberal institution to the core, made the normalization of relations with Israel illegal. In fact, you can be beheaded if you promote the idea of normalizing relations with Israel. So, which is I should have said that in the beginning. It's pretty funny because this was the parliament that the U.S. created, banning all the parties. But you know, talk about failure. And the point is that Israel has had a string of losses. And of course, you know, the Ukrainian war has been over for a long time. Russians won their objectives. So the point being is that there's a little bit of a panic here. So they need to invent this concept of this savage Iran who just wants to slaughter Jews for no good reason. And now you have the Israeli defense minister saying we need American soldiers to die for the Jewish state. And they're not even shy about that anymore. Somehow a lot of that doesn't make it into the American press. I'm including these from more specialized sources. But that's, you know, they're as I said last week, they're constructing their enemy, not actually trying to understand it.
Well, earlier this year, the Israelis simulated a massive bombing campaign over Iran with a series of repeated airstrikes against Iran's civilian nuclear energy program. The drills took place over the Mediterranean Sea, spanned over 10,000 kilometers, and saw more than 100 military aircraft and Navy submarines participating. These simulations capped off a month-long military exercise called Chariots of Fire, which practiced for war with Iran and other contingencies. The US general overseeing Central Command was in attendance. The IDF's chief of staff has now announced the Israeli military's primary focus is preparing an attack on Iran. In the Red Sea, the US and Israel are now conducting joint war drills. The Iran situation is another deadly indication that presidents and administrations may change, but the overall foreign policy agenda does not. Apparently, it only gets worse. The US empire is in decline and the American people feel it. But the neocons and their liberal interventionist partners are holding on to their dream of a unipolar moment. As the world adjusts to a multipolar world order, the US foreign policy establishment, left and right, has picked fights with its enemies, not our enemies. America's only enemy is our own ruling class who would drag us into wars, proxy wars or otherwise, including with nuclear-armed world powers, in order to fulfill their desires to violently dominate the planet, funneling trillions of our dollars into the military-industrial complex. This establishment's geopolitical and monetary schemes are destroying our nation's future. As the Ron Paul Institute's Daniel McAdams recently said, American foreign policy is the Fed with nukes. We have been stuck with a bill for more than $10 trillion after more than 20 years of war and killing in the Middle East, with millions dead and tens of thousands of soldiers committing suicide and eventually losing in Afghanistan as well. I mean, Matt, what are your thoughts on what was just said there?
Well, as everyone knows, I've been making this exact same argument for, God, I don't know, two decades now. I was making it in the first Iraq war in the 90s. And, of course, predicting Russia's rise in this sense. 20 years ago, a mainstream political figure would never have made a statement like this. You know, the Fed with nukes. I use the metaphor of an action movie. That's how these things are reported and understood, and actually by the policymakers themselves. You know, growing up with this kind of a good guy, bad guy action movie, that's how they see foreign policy. And it's the same thing over and over again, inventing this enemy that does not exist. Anyways, because you see it in World War I, you saw it in the Civil War, you saw, you know, the creation of this enemy, the savage Germans in World War I who were murdering babies in Belgium for no reason. But besides all that, warfare also will give the U.S. its final excuse to wipe out all opposition. And this has been a longstanding one of the reasons that the regime loves war, because under times of great stress, they can get away with things like this while, you know, their media is focused on something completely different. I think recently 1% of Americans think that Russia is America's number one problem. And that's, you know, the margin. It could be zero. It's in the margin of error. And yet in the press, you see it constantly. Make-believe, invented stories and invented ideas having no relation to reality. And that's what goes with what he's saying here. This is the regime's enemies, not ours. We have no stake in that one way or the other. But you read the Pentagon, you read their defense concept, and they say these are the number one problem that America faces, that liberalism is under attack everywhere, using that phrase. Not, you know, but using liberalism and capitalism as a central ideological focus of the Pentagon. So, you know, he's absolutely right. Now, by now, this late date, if people don't understand what you just read, if that's somehow new to people, then maybe, you know, politics isn't your thing. Because if by now you don't understand this, there is something wrong with you. You're either stupid or dishonest.
Well, let's have a look at Iran's oil revenues, since we've got all these sanctions going on. But Iran's revenues from exports of oil and condensate surged by 580% during the first 4 months of the current Iranian year that begins on March 21st. Iranian Minister of Economic Affairs and Finance Syed Ehsan Kanduzi said on Tuesday, between March 21st and July 21st, international crude oil prices have largely held above $100 per barrel after the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the sanctions on Russian oil exports upended global trade flows. Due to the increase in oil exports and our new budget's currency conversion rate, we saw a 580% increase in the Treasury's income from the export of oil and condensate in the first 4 months of this year, the Iranian finance minister was quoted as saying by local news agency IRNA. Overall, Iran's budget income jumped by 48% in March-July compared to the same period of 21, while government expenditures rose by 16%, the minister added. The government was focused on this issue to be able to earn a more stable income. This means that compensating the budget deficit was on the agenda of the government, and it was realized in the first 4 months of this year, the minister said. So they're doing quite well out of their oil then, Matt. Would that be due to Russia in Ukraine? I mean, why is Iran doing so well with the oil?
Well, given where they are in the world, the Russian war and the sanctions actually does affect oil price. Remember, oil prices are not – there's no market. It's set by a handful of oligarchs. That, by the way, has nothing to do with gas prices in America. The U.S. gets its oil from all over the place. Rarely is it affected by something like this. Western Europe, okay, I could see it because they're very dependent on Russian energy. But the U.S. Is not. So that's just pure gouging as far as oil companies are concerned, using this as an excuse. But Russia's in the same boat. Because of the regime's work in Europe, they're awash with cash. And despite Iranian inflation being very high for reasons that we've already discussed, COVID being one of them. Of course, this is worse than it looks, but 580%, and that's going to, you know, for the moment, it's going to stay. That's been going on for a while now. They still have a positive balance of trade, as Iran, they always have a surplus. The social spending has gone up. This is actually good for them. Inflation is high, but nowhere near as high as this increase in oil price.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Does the oil price compensate for the inflation rate? Iran's 12-month inflation rate hit 40% in July, Iranian statistics showed last week. Prices of goods have soared since the government removed some subsidies earlier this year. Despite the diplomatic impasse over the nuclear deal, Iran has been preparing to rejoin the global oil market. The country has boosted production as well as exports to its main market, China. If a new deal is reached between Iran and the world powers, the flow of Iranian oil abroad could increase by between 500,000 BPD and 1 million BPD, according to analysts. China has been the main outlet for Iranian crude oil exports since the US reimposed sanctions on the Islamic Republic's oil industry in 2018, when then-President Donald Trump pulled the United States out of the so-called Iranian nuclear deal, officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. So Iran is doing fine with China. But how come they have this high inflation then, Matt, if they're doing so well with the prices of the oil? And is it compensating for it? Because how come they've just got this huge inflation if they're producing all this oil?
Well, they're not going to raise interest rates anymore. I think it's been 18% across the board for a long time. The Iranians are now, wherever they can, buying precious metals, although they are way, way down. You know, gold and silver are way down. Those old days, $10 million an ounce are finished. But we've already discussed it. There's so much disruption but it's not necessarily American sanctions because their markets are to the east. And then he doesn't mention India here as another big market for Iranian oil. They don't need the U.S. it's from, you know, there has been a legitimate economic decline, even though clearly this has negated it. So I would suspect that inflation is going to go down. There's all kinds of ways to measure inflation. The U.S. is probably in a similar boat from irresponsibility. And I want to note, too, remember the riots a few years ago that the regime was saying was because they were so angry, the government? No, it was because the Iranians gave in on the nuclear deal. You know, it's never what it seems. The government is popular. Everybody in Iran with any brain realizes this isn't the government's fault that these problems exist, that this is the West. This is warfare. This is everything that was unleashed on them. I mean, you have to be a moron not to realize that. So what they're trying to do is destroy the economy in every possible way hopefully bring down the government. And if they have to kill millions of Iranians, well, they'll do it. That's no big deal to them. But it's holding firm. If anything, Iranians are more patriotic now than ever because they know who the enemy is and why. So I'm predicting this inflation, which came from all the factors we've already discussed, is going to decrease as time goes on. I can't say the same thing for the U.S.
And, of course, the more sanctions there are and the more pressure is put on the country, usually the more support the citizens of the country have for their government. So this will probably increase nationalist feeling within Iran. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Grandpa Dan will be back tomorrow with another episode of The Daily Nationalist. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.